There are some people who you might hear on a podcast, these multimillionaire success stories, and you kind of wonder, are they truly that amazing in real life? Most of my guests are as amazing in real life, but I can tell you this guy truly lives what he preaches. You do not want to miss this episode.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Fulmer, empowering you to transform your life. One imperfect day at a time.
Welcome back to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I am your host, Anna Fulmer. It is episode 99. The next show is episode number 100. So exciting. We are celebrating all month long. Today we are talking about the top 10 favorite podcast episodes that I have done so far on the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast and why. This is a friendly reminder that you still have several days to enter to win the $100 Amazon gift card in celebration of the 100th episode. There is a link in the show notes. It'll take you right to the giveaway. Again, it's very, very easy to enter. If you're watching on YouTube, just click on the description below. One of several ways that you can enter through this link is by reviewing the podcast on iTunes or Apple. And what I am asking you to do is when you review the podcast, to mention your favorite episode or the most memorable or meaningful episode to you. And if it involved a guest, please mention them by name because I will screenshot it and send it to that guest specifically. Those of us in this business value your kind words more than you could possibly know. And I know how much it will mean to that person, whoever it is that you especially remember and thinking like, oh, yes, that was so meaningful to me, or that made such a difference for me. So again, so grateful for you. This giveaway is just a small thank you. I would not be here without you. I cannot say it enough. I'm incredibly grateful to be able to do this for a living. And it is because of you that I am celebrating the last 100 episodes. Let's talk about my top 10 favorite episodes of 100. This was so hard to narrow down, but let's talk about my top 10 favorite and share sort of highlights from each episode. Favorite episode number 10 of my top 20. This interview was meaningful to me for a lot of reasons. I have mentioned it before. It is really special when I'm able to have family members and friends come onto the podcast. Some people who have come on, we have been friends with for a lot longer than others. We have a longer history. This guest was one of those. He and my husband have been best friends since college. And this guest happened to be the best man in our wedding. My husband was in his wedding. They played football together at Grove City College. My husband was a safety, and Coach Andrew DiDonato was the quarterback at Grove City. He is now the head coach at Grove City, which is such an incredible story. The bottom line is this: Andrew DiDonato is a legend for multiple reasons there at Grove City, but he has basically turned this D3 college football program around, and it is the most successful program the school has ever seen in 125 years. We laughed. We had so much fun in this interview, and this is an incredible opportunity to hear from a real life coach in the daily grind of, you know, a program that had I think they lost 30 games in a row when Andrew took it over. And so you do not want to miss this episode. This is without a doubt one of my top 10. Here is Start Winning with This Proven Formula for Success with Coach Andrew DiDonato.
Every one of those buildings started with a blueprint. Somebody had a vision for what they would look like. They were built one brick at a time, no shortcuts. That represents process. And mortar holds it together, which represents love. So when we say brick by brick, what we're saying is, look, we're going to build in this area by having a clear vision, embracing a process that overflows in love. So then we get to the football aspect. Here we are in 2016. We hadn't won a game in 3 years. And we said, look, the vision's to compete for PAC championships. And it's not just, hey, we're going to win championships. It's Jim Collins wrote a book, Good to Great, one of my favorite books, highly recommend it. Plug there.
Good to Great.
Good to Great. Yeah, essentially, him and his research team studied all these companies that were average, but made a jump to greatness based off revenue, stock returns, compared to companies who stayed the same. And one of the models in there that he said that those companies that jumped to greatness did was they asked three very specific questions, and they are, and he drew them in circles, what can we be the best at in the world at? What drives our economic engine, which means what works, and what are we deeply passionate about? And he said, if you can answer those questions and find where those three circles intersect, you're going to build something special. So we said, look, for our vision, when we say compete for PAC championships, when we think of our offense, we're going to ask those three questions. And where those three circles intersect, that's going to be our offensive vision. So for example, we don't ask the question, what can we be best in the world at? We ask the question, what can we be best in the PAC at, which is our conference? So some practical examples of that would be our offense. We have a specific offensive vision, which is unique to us by answering those three circles. And prior to September 24th, 2018, we had not, you know, it took us 2 years to answer those three questions. Honestly, we had one of the worst ranked offenses in the conference. By 2019, it jumped to first. 2021, first again. It's nothing special, but that's to us the power of a vision. So you have a vision. The process is what we call AR, effort, and discipline, which are, you know, some football things there with alignment, assignment, read technique, and love. Everybody has to do their job. So we've seen that transform our offense. Same thing with our program as a whole. You know, we go 0-10, 0-10, 0-10, 4-6, 8-3, 9-2, 8-3. You know, 2018, our first postseason win in school history, 125 years. And do it again the next year.
Let's just say that again. First postseason win, Andrew's the head coach in how many years?
125 years of football.
125 years of football. So keep listening because these techniques, they work.
So when I look at vision, I think a big part of vision is identifying what you can be the best at. And when we were sitting there and looking at, well, there's almost 250 teams in Division III football, I'll never be able to answer that question accurately of what we could be the best at, what could be our niche. When we look at only nine other teams in our conference, we can build an offensive system and identity based off, hey, here's what could be our niche. Here's what could, here's the thing that we really can be the best at. And we did the same thing with our defense. And just a great point you made there of why we term our vision the way it is, compete for PAC, as it says, okay, here's something that we can really zero in on and be able to answer these questions, these three questions accurately. And that model I'm referring to, for anybody, you can Google it. It's called the Hedgehog Model. Jim Collins, Good to Great. So many great resources. I use that in everything. I just talked with my brother-in-law's company and talked with them about Hedgehog. We had a lot of great conversations, how they're using it. I mean, it doesn't matter what your field is. It's a way to get to have a very clear, I use the word vision, but you can use many words here, but it's something you can use answering those three questions to get a very clear picture of how you can operate to achieve success.
Hey parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Favorite episode number 9. This is one of my favorite things to talk about, and it is an essential element of living well, and especially in the fitness and nutrition world. But it is a conversation that is very confusing. And my goal was to help you cut through the clutter of fad diets and media marketing and all of the colors that come at you that you're not sure what's true and what's not. I did a 3-part series on protein. Personally, I enjoyed doing all three of these episodes, but if you want to start at the beginning, then you want to check out this episode, The Truth About Protein and Weight Loss, and how to find the best protein powders and the best protein sources for weight loss. The reality is this: not all protein is created equal. Some protein sources have a higher bioavailability than others. And I'll give you just a little tidbit. Animal-based protein sources have a higher bioavailability of protein than plant-based. So how then do we get our protein if we're living a plant-based diet? I am not, by the way. I am a hashtag meatitarian. I love myself some meat. But this is a very real issue. And there's nothing wrong with a plant-based diet, but it means you have to be a little bit more intentional. We will talk about that. In the meantime, I want to give you a little tip. As you are starting to look at your plates and you're thinking, ooh, how do I know if I have enough protein on this plate? Approximately the size of your fist. So if you make a fist, there should be enough protein the size of your fist. So for example, a chicken breast, size of your fist, a pork chop, size of your fist. The list goes on. Really, really simple way. If you're looking at your plate and you're wondering if you have enough protein, there should be at least enough protein that would be equivalent to the size of your fist. Food was meant to be enjoyed, but we need to learn to be mindful consumers of how we are fueling our bodies. We want to avoid, prevent, eliminate mindless eating so that we can actually think less about food and enjoy it more, less stress. If you would like to learn a sustainable way of living fit, where food is leveraged as fuel to prevent disease, to strengthen your body, to lose fat fast, I'd love to have you join my next round of the Faster Way to Fat Loss. It is a virtual 6-week fitness and nutrition program. You can click on the link in the show notes to see when the next round starts. I would love to have you. Good luck navigating the world of protein powders and trying to stay all natural. I would know. I've done it for many years. Don't worry. I'll make it simple for you. Favorite episode number 8. This was an unbelievably special interview, and it actually was originally recorded in this family's home. This was not actually a podcast interview. I interviewed this family for a gala that I organized and hosted as a fundraiser for our adoption, but more importantly, to share local adoption stories. It was an unbelievable night. I dream of hosting another event like it in the future, especially after we've brought our son home. I think that would be incredibly special. But this, if you have a heart for adoption or an interest in adoption, this story is unheard of. This is a multi-generation adoption story. The civil rights movement had only just gained momentum, and this couple adopted 10 children of varying races and disabilities. 50 years later, their family legacy includes 3 generations of adopted children, and I had the honor of sitting down and recording their story. This is an episode you do not want to miss. It's overcoming racial barriers with love, a multi-generation adoption story.
I think it's important not to be offended at the questions.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
At first, I couldn't believe some of the things people would say.
Yeah.
And then I thought, no, wait a minute. They're not trying to be offensive.
Yes.
It just sounds offensive to me.
Yeah.
And if I get a chance to change what they're saying by being, I just want to talk to them and answer their questions and let them see my side of the story. And hopefully that helps them the next time they see something like that.
Yeah.
I never felt anybody was particularly mean about it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let them be mean with my kids or anything, but educating somebody is better than being offended by them.
Amen. And I think what I love about that point is the concept that, you know, sometimes you feel like you're walking on eggshells, especially nowadays with the whole race conversation. And as a white, very privileged woman, I understand that concept of sometimes you just feel like you don't even want to say anything because you feel like anything that comes out of your mouth will be misconstrued as racist. But I guess the concern is that then there's no conversation. There's no conversation. And so I think something that I'm already taking away so early on in this point is that some conversation is better than no conversation, because then no conversation isolates people. And to be willing as the person who's not really understanding of adoption, as I was for many years, I think now on this side of things, that sense of, no, I want people to ask because that's how conversation starts to happen. Mm-hmm. And I also want to show my son and my other children very early on that the way to actually help people is to have these open conversations. So don't be offended, show grace. And then you guys had 3 children biologically,
right,
and adopted your 4th.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of how do you know the likelihood of potential adoption? Does anybody know that? Like, if somebody's watching this and thinking, I'm interested in the foster, maybe foster to adopt, is there, like, you get one child, is there a higher likelihood that that child could potentially be available for adoption versus another child? Do you have any sense of that when they come into your home?
So the way it works with in Pennsylvania right now in our foster system, a parent, a biological parent, has a minimum of 15 months before they could even start the process of terminating parental rights. Mm. So from the moment that the child enters the foster system, the clock starts and you can expect a minimum.
The foster care system, not necessarily your home.
Right. Right, the system. So usually they say it can be up to 2 years. But so then you can gauge it a little bit depending on.
Right.
Now with James, he was coming into the system starting at 0. So we knew that we were looking at a minimum of 15 months and probably longer before.
You had any idea of.
Right.
Yeah.
Before even rights were terminated, and then the adoption process would start. So
the whole concept of fear with adoption are so closely related. I think that is the number one reason that the barrier to adoption may be, aside from money, is the concept of just fear and uncertainty. And I love, there's just multiple testimonies here of, you know, you walk forward by faith and with patience and with grace and with laughter. If there is one thing, if you could briefly say one thing that you wish the general public understood about adoption, what would it be?
I would say that, again, I think that in reaching out and being willing to adopt, it breaks barriers, period. And like you, Anna, you and your husband are breaking a barrier in your own families. Other people will adopt because you adopted. Mm. And that's like, it's a neat spiral. Mm.
That's because you help them break the fear barrier.
And just by living, again, not necessarily just by living, it'll, because you're going to have good times, you're going to have bad times, like every family. That's life. But when other people see you live it out, then they're not as afraid. They're like, okay.
Personally, I would say, and this is my personal belief, adoption is God's heart because he adopts us into his family.
Amen.
And he does that through Jesus. And I don't think he doesn't call everybody to do that, but it's a blessing. I wouldn't change anything. We've had lots and lots of problems. We're not a perfect family by any means. I could tell you stories about our family that would just make your hair turn, but they were growing up. They had, some of them came as older children and with lots of problems with what happened to them before, and they had to work through that, and I would change a thing. I'd do it all over again.
Favorite episode number 7. This was such a fun episode to record. I was not sure how this episode was going to go because this particular guest happened to only be 9 years old at the time. And I was not really sure how the question and answer format was going to work and what she would think. I interviewed my daughter, Gracelyn, my oldest, and we chatted everything from acting and animals and her dream pet and what it was like to audition for a musical for the first time. Fun fact, she just wrapped up. So at the time of this interview, she had just auditioned for her very first show. It was a primarily adult cast. There was only a couple kids' roles. She had never auditioned for anything before. She only had 1 year of acting. She's never taken voice lessons. And she shared on this podcast episode what it was like to audition for the first time. And you guys, this girl was like throwing out nuggets of wisdom that were even blowing me away. I would like to take credit for it, but the fact is she's just mature beyond her years. I have so much fun with her. She is a blessing to me. She challenges me. And what's interesting is at the time of my recording this, the show just ended, and I can just tell you this. I don't know what she wants to do with her life. That will be up to her, but she shines on stage. She is truly talented, And it was just so amazing watching her work so hard and love it. She shines on and off the stage, and you'll enjoy this podcast too. Acting Animals and Living Your Best 9-Year-Old Life with my daughter, Gracelyn Fulmer.
I told myself, just do it, but have fun with it. Don't do it. And then when you walk out, say to yourself, wow, I did it. Now I'm done. I don't have to do that again.
Mm.
Walk out saying okay, I'm done. But don't think to yourself, fine, I'm done. That was I didn't want to do that. Maybe you didn't want to do that. But at least tell yourself that was fun, because you're going to feel bad about it.
I love that. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. And, you know, I think too, for moms listening, she's 9 years old, and I would love to take a lot of credit here, which God has given her a lot of insight and wisdom in life. So I can actually take very little credit. But one of the things that I think from a standpoint that I've learned is finding that balance between, you know, for piano and the things that you do, I do try to push you to practice hard, right? To prepare well so that you feel more confident than when the performance comes, when that moment comes and you feel prepared. That is half of success is the preparation. But then when the moment actually comes, what do we talk about? It doesn't matter if you mess up. It doesn't matter how many mistakes that you make.
If you make a mistake,
you just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because it's done.
It's not like they're going to know. It's not like they're going to know. If you make a mistake, it's fine. It's not like anyone's going to know it's a mistake.
Yep. And even if they do know, it's okay, because you have made progress, you've grown, and you've done your very best. And that's ultimately what we want in the end. So that's kind of my approach. And I hope that I communicate that to all my kids. When the show actually happens, when the moment comes, you prepare. And then when the performance happens, you just enjoy it. And whatever happens, happens, and you go with it. So I think, Gracie, you've modeled that very, very well. It's fun to walk that journey with you. I think you gave great advice. Favorite episode countdown, number 6. We're on the top 10 countdown. This is number 6. There are a couple people who, since I have started this entrepreneur journey, who stand out to me as somebody who, when I think what I want to be, if I ever gain success, not just necessarily financially, right? We all define success in different ways, but just simply the influence of a position like this. This man comes to mind. This is somebody I hope to emulate, because I have personally benefited from his generosity. This is a 9-figure entrepreneur. This man runs an empire. He's incredibly successful across all definitions of success, but he has such a servant heart. And that was evident to me when I first started throwing out the idea of podcasting. You guys, I didn't even have a podcast yet. I barely had a business yet. This was towards the summer, fall of 2021. And I was just in the process of getting things underway for this podcast. And a group that we're part of, there's 500 members of this group, big names from all over the place. Then there's little me, you know. And somebody said, you know, why don't you reach out to Stephen Scoggins? He's got an incredibly successful podcast, a very, very successful entrepreneur. So I'm I'm the girl who, absolutely, no harm, no foul. I'll give it a shot. I didn't really expect this man to get back to me. And lo and behold, doesn't Stephen not only get back to me, he's like, I would be happy to meet with you to talk about podcasting. He said, let's do a Zoom call. He said, let's go with video. He said, I'm going to give you a show of my studio. I'll show you all the equipment that I use and give you my pointers. And I mean, it was just amazing. It made all the difference for me in establishing success in this podcasting world from the get-go. And I share that because there are some people who you might hear on a podcast, or you might hear, you know, these multimillionaire success stories. And, you know, you kind of wonder, are they truly that amazing in real life, or is this just for an interview? Most of my guests are as amazing in real life, but I can tell you, this guy truly lives what he preaches. He's unbelievably generous. He has an incredible story, was on the brink of suicide. and had an amazing, amazing experience. You do not want to miss this episode. This is Breaking Limitations to Leave a Legacy from Homeless to $100 Million Entrepreneur with Stephen Scoggins.
At the end of the day, the very thing that you think is trying to kill you is actually the very thing that's actually building you. It's the thing that's creating your version of your story. It's the thing that's teaching you the most about yourself. You know, we don't learn anything from our, I mean, I don't, at least I don't feel like we really truly learn a lot from our successes, things that we get, you know, that we accomplish that other people say, oh, that looks amazing. Congratulations, you know, fancy stuff. Woo. Right. We've learned far more about ourselves from the places in which we think we're never going to get back up from. And it doesn't have to be sitting on a bridge to feel like you're never going to get back up. It could be a failed relationship that you thought that person was the one. Like you just believe with all your heart they were the one. It was going so good. And all of a sudden, the rug's out from under you. You're not even sure how you ended up there. It's the getting passed over for a promotion. Again, when you feel like you're working about as hard as you possibly can, but having no clarity on what to do next, right? And I think at the end of the day, I think the number one thing that I think has allowed me to keep pushing forward more than anything else is knowing that God's got it all under control.
Right.
Amen. Like no matter what I think it is, he's got it, right? He already saw what I'm now doing when I was the homeless kid or sitting beside the litter box. He already knew all that. He already spoke that into existence. And there has to be a healthy level of faith, knowing that if you don't give up, you will get to experience the very thing that has been spoken over you. I don't know if that's clear enough, but I think that's where my heart goes anyway.
I think it's stepping into the God-given purpose is what I'm hearing you say. It's that sense of the other piece that I think you're communicating with, I'll consolidate it, but I think there's also a degree of humility. It's a humble sense of, I don't have it all together. You mentioned pride you felt like is ultimately what kept you from succeeding at the time, you know, and I also have seen it in my own life, this sense of humbly recognizing I don't have it all together and that there's beauty in that. It's not actually a problem. That is the solution. The sooner that we can recognize we are imperfect, I mean, that's what I'm all about here is, you know, as soon as you own that sense of humility and imperfection and embrace it is truly when we empower transformation. And I think it also gives you then that strength to never give up. And it also takes the focus off of ourselves and puts it onto other people, which you exemplify so well, that service-based mindset. So one of the other things that I love to ask at this point is, if you could achieve one thing yet in your lifetime, personal, professional, could be ridiculous or very profound, what would it be?
I want to be a Steve Myrick for 1 million people.
Okay, who's that?
So Steve Myrick is the mentor that I mentioned earlier.
I didn't hear his last name before.
I want to be the person who can kickstart or light a fire under somebody.
Yeah.
Who has no idea what they're really capable of. You know, Steve Myrick believed in me when I didn't believe in myself.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy, and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
Top 10 favorite podcast episodes so far on the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. Number 5. We are slowly working our way up to number 1. Can you guess what it is? Has anybody taken a guess? You should take a guess right now. If you've been with me for a while, take a guess. See if you can figure out what number 1 is, or 1 and 2. This is number five. This was one of those full circle moments that was really, really cool to record. There's been multiple full circle moments in these last couple of years, but this episode was an interview between my husband and I, between Zach and myself, and we answered a lot of your questions about the fixer-upper journey that we have had for the last 10 years. If you are listening for the first time ever, Zach and I, our very first home was a fixer-upper. We did really well. We're like, all right, let's keep going with this. And we renovated, completely gutted and renovated the three homes that we have lived in with our children over the last 10 years. We are currently, at the time of that recording and this recording, in a rental house until we find our forever property home. And we're so excited to make it our own. We have dreamed of that day for a long time, and we're just waiting in anticipation. This episode was really special because we had fun reliving the many, many memories, answering your financial questions. We really were transparent. We dug deep. I have said it before. In my mind, money is a vehicle, not a destination. I don't mind talking about money because there is no inherent worth in it. It is just a tool in the tool belt. It has nothing to do with our overall value. So we dove into like finances, what we did well, what we did terribly. I can tell you we did more terribly than we did well initially. That is for sure. But we talked about everything from cracked paint to flooded basements, what reno with kids looks like. This is Fixer Upper House Q&A with Zach and Anna. As they got older, we were really, really intentional about teaching them what the tools were for, how you use them, what you absolutely did not touch. I mean, I don't believe in luck, so I'm not going to knock on wood, but we've not had one injury, which is truly shocking for either of us, for any of us.
It's more shocking that I haven't hurt myself, but...
Yeah, I mean, it really is kind of amazing that we have not had a significant injury, considering the boards and the nails and just the amount of chaos. Well,
I was really careful because I knew that if I cut myself, that you had a suture kit at home, but nothing to numb it with. So you would have just told me to like bite a belt and stitch it up. And no, thank you.
Why run into the ER when I can do it here? That was one of the things I was really good at. Yep.
I did not want to be a patient.
That's actually probably one of the only things I miss about the ER. I really loved suturing.
That's a little weird.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I loved procedures. I love suturing. Anyway, he's absolutely right. Suck it up. Yeah. Zach mentioned some of the other things that we would do. We always unplug. Well, Zach was better at this than me, actually. Always unplugging, like miter saws, circular saws.
Things always got unplugged. The safety always got put on or got set out of reach. We got locking a blade down or taking it out of like a jigsaw or a chop saw. But then as far as working with kids, I can remember plenty of times giving a container of fasteners of some sort to one of the kids. And their job was to hand it to me. And yeah, it might slow down a little bit because I could just go grab a handful myself. But at this point, they were working with me. They just hand me one when I needed it or to hand me the tools. At one point, I know we bought, or somebody else bought for our kids, like the little play tool set.
Yep.
And so they'd have their little drill and sit there going into the whatever project I was working on, or a little saw that they'd go against it. So they'd work with me. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah. And again, I think it's creating age-appropriate ways for them to be involved. The biggest downside, and I think this is what makes a lot of people pause and they keep putting off and procrastinating their project because they don't feel like they can do it with their kids around, is it slows you down. Mm-hmm. It slows you down. But in my mind, here's the thing. Practically speaking, you look at the time standpoint. Okay, it slows you down, but you get it done versus you don't get it done for a crazy amount of time simply because you don't feel like doing it with kids. So I guess you have to weigh the pros and the cons, but the reality is start teaching your kids how to be around power tools, how to be around mess and projects and involve them. There's so many benefits to being able to do stuff with your kids. There's teaching moments. I still remember our third fixer-upper. We had this whole wall that we needed to knock down. And this was like the whole family was involved. We had all the kids with us. And we gave Gracie a hammer and we said, go at it. And she would have been age appropriate. She would have been what, I think?
Seven.
That was 3 years ago. So yeah, probably around seven. And she hit her finger. It's like the only time I can actually remember a kid really hitting hitting their finger with a hammer even. And I remember she had her tears. We wrapped it in a Band-Aid and she said, "Mommy, I want to keep going." Yeah. Like something so simple, but it was that whole concept speaking into, get it, girl. Like you hit your finger, that hurt. You learned your lesson, how not to hold it and keep going. Caleb, I think we gave a hammer for all of 1 minute before we confiscated it. Not quite as ready for tools at that age. Education, empowering them to understand the process, to be involved, making sure it's age appropriate, not being afraid of the mess, not being afraid of the messy process. We let our kids paint. So paint gets on them. Make sure they're wearing paint clothes. No big deal. Paint gets all over their face. You just take it off, you know, with a paint remover. It won't kill them. But it allows them to be part of the process and allows you to get the job done. Any other tips, Zach, like practical things that I'm not thinking of?
I think we covered a lot of them. It's getting them involved in whatever way they can, even if it's just holding a screw.
And to be clear, depending on the age, we did put a show on for them. We distracted them with shows. If they were not able to be involved in a safe manner, we absolutely did distract them with shows. You do what you need to do, but just get it done. Just start it and get it done. Don't use your kids being around as an excuse to not get it done. Episode number 4 of my top 10 favorite as we count down to the 100th episode. When my Faster Way to Fat Loss clients first do my program, there's a weekly training video. And in week 1, I introduce myself. And one of the things that I challenge every client of mine to do is to be transparent with their story, to be willing to share their story, to be willing to share their journey, because someone else needs to hear it. It is quite literally why I do what I do on the podcast and why I love having guests on, is to share the imperfect progress that marks our lives, as opposed to just the highlight reels that we so often see on social media, when in reality, the majority of our time is spent in the ugly, messy, behind-the-scenes progress phase. And that's what I'm passionate about rewinding and talking about. And I encourage my clients to be willing to share the before and after pictures, to share their story, their journey. I'll be honest with you, very few do. And it's heartbreaking because somebody needs to hear it and they're worth celebrating. All my clients are worth celebrating. They're absolutely amazing. This was a client who embodied that reality of living with boldness, being willing to share. And I will tell you right now, I have had more clients sign up for the program because of this woman. Because of this woman being willing to strip down in a sports bra and leggings and share the real life before and after, even though the after 6 weeks, she's like, "Oh, this isn't where I want to stay, but here's the progress," and get on the podcast and share her journey. And I have so much respect for her. This was one of my favorite because I know how much courage it takes, and she is an inspiration. You will be inspired by her story. And if nothing else, I hope you are encouraged that everyone's story matters. Everyone's story matters. And she has made such an impact already because of the fact that she was willing to share. This is Fasterway client and rock star Kathy Vintash sharing her story.
Besides my chest pain, I had joint pain, and I knew my pain was from just carrying around this extra weight for years. I can't believe 2015 was so long ago when all this started. Mm-hmm. But, you know, knees hurt, hips hurt. My low back was killing me. I could barely get out of the couch. Like if I sat for a while, watched a show and then got up, I was limping. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. And that's gone now. I do have some right hip pain, which I have to probably get looked at now, but pretty much everything else, like I was just having pain in my leg, like my thighs. My muscles hurt. So you're just working extra hard to get around. And it's amazing how now I have, today I have pain up in here from the arm workout.
Yes. Oh, amen. Gosh. You and me both.
How are you doing that? But, yeah, I mean, like the pain I have now is good pain, and I know what good pain feels like, and it feels good because you stretch and you feel it. But the other pain, it was horrible pain. And I don't have chest pain. I probably have it maybe once a week now, for a couple of hours when I take a deep breath, I'll feel it, but it doesn't, it's not there all the time. I have not gotten at all, even during the HIIT workouts, I have not gotten any chest pain at all.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I know.
Again, it's so fascinating that, so we're both medical minds here. And for anyone that has hung out here for any length of time knows how much I love my research. Like, you know, tell me why I'm doing what I'm doing. Don't just tell me what to do. Tell me why I'm doing it. Show me the proof. And what's so fascinating is just the inflammatory aspect of these nutritional strategies. I mean, that's ultimately, again, I mentioned earlier, pericarditis is, for all intents and purposes, an inflammation of a certain portion of the heart. And so much pain is inflammatory. So it's now just a really interesting.
It's all about milk. No, I'm just kidding.
It's all about milk. It is all about dairy. It is. So she's saying that too, because I also sort of make fun of people who are basically like, milk is the culprit for everything. I'm like, well, there might be some other things.
Yeah, I think it was the food I was eating, the chocolate I was consuming. I mean, it was just a lot of, I think a lot of it has to do with the food, because I mean, I've tried to work out before. I just think I overdid it before, you know.
Yep. There's such a thing as too much exercise
all the time.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's just not the way.
Yeah. And ladies, if you are spending more than if you're spending an hour a day exercising, come sit beside me. You are working out way too much. way too much.
And the weights, I mean, they're very intimidating when you see, when you think of it, like, what do you mean you do weights? But I do lower weights. I do the modification. I don't do my, I don't do push-ups. I do it like on a chair. I do it on a chair. I try the best I can.
That's a push-up. That's a push-up. It's just a push-up on a chair. You guys, modification is not failure. Modification is personalization to get you results and progress.
And,
if that means
sweating.
That you do a push-up on a chair, you do it. Absolutely. Right. Good for
you.
Favorite episode number 3. We are in the top 3 of my favorite 10 episodes over the last 100 episodes on the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. This episode was so meaningful to me for several reasons. Number 1, this was the first guest that responded to being on my podcast. I met him at a conference. There was probably 50 people in the room. I shared what I wanted my future podcast to be about. And I said, I would love for any of you to come on. He was the first person that came up to me and said, hey, I'd love to be on your podcast and share my story. Months later, when I actually sent invitations to all these people who said, yes, I'd be interested. And you know how it goes. Somebody says they're interested, but in reality, they never even sign up to do it. So I sent out these email invites to all these people. Anton Gunn was the very first person to respond and sign up for a time. I'll never forget it. I remember thinking, like, this is a man of his word. This is a man of his word. First person to sign up for my podcast. I'll always, always remember that about him. But here is why this episode is not only culturally relevant, but to me, why it is so meaningful in the divided society that we live in. We live in a culture of extremes where people of different political affiliations can hardly have a real conversation together because there's such divide. There's racial tension. There's gender inequality between men and women. You know, the list goes on. What's so meaningful to me about this interview is not just the fact that Anton is an unbelievable guy. I mean, this guy is so well-spoken and has so many amazing experiences that he pulls from when he talks about leadership. That is his world-class leadership, is his cup of tea, it is his expertise. He is incredibly well-spoken on it. But to me, it represents the much-needed concept in our culture of real conversation, of trying so hard to fight against social bias and learn how to have real conversation with people who we may find difficult to relate to. There is always a way to relate to people. And oh my word, Anton and I could have talked for hours. In fact, we did talk a lot at the conference. But here's an example of two people of different races, of different political affiliations, of different genders, sitting down, laughing together, having a real conversation, and enjoying each other's stories and perspectives. This is how to become a leader that everyone respects, a world-class leader, with Anton Gunn.
We can't tell people that we care without actually doing something to show them that we care. And you can't care about people you don't know. So you got to take the time to learn about people, learn their background, learn what's important to them, where they come from, what makes them tick, what inspires them, what motivates them, what pisses them off, what they hate about life, what they love about life, their struggles, their highs, their lows, what their aspirations are. And so the best leaders are the ones that know the answer to every one of those questions on the teams that they lead. And I tried to do that in public service. And that's why I built the friendships that I built, is because I asked the question, what's your favorite sport? Is it football or is it something else? And when those guys said NASCAR, I was like, well, hey, football is my number one. But guess what? I like NASCAR too. And I like Toyota and I like Tony Stewart and I like the 20 car that he's driving. And I shop at Home Depot. And so all of these things become these opportunities to build bridges.
Now, if they had said lacrosse, you might have been like, peace, I'm out.
I got nothing. Yeah, I got nothing on the lacrosse.
Sorry, no lax birds here. We'll chat later. So oh my gosh, there's so much. We'll unpack more of that. But I want to highlight, you then had the honor to serve as the senior advisor to President Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that a position like that, there has to be pressure, challenges. You know, I can't imagine that, you know, politics are probably not the same in every position. There's probably added pressures here and there, and there's different expectations. And I think this is true of any career move or any goal that we have in life. There are challenges that come with any, whether it be a lateral move or kind of a move up the ladder. Do you have any stories in that incredible experience of times where you made a mistake, where there was a significant learning curve and you had to laugh at yourself, shake it off, or maybe you had to cry first and then laugh and then shake it off, that you could share?
Way too many. I'll put it to you that way. Here's what I would say, first and foremost, in anything in life for any leader out there, I have this phrase that I use: the higher the level, the bigger the devil. And what do I mean by that is that the higher you go up in leadership, the bigger the obstacles that you will face, the enemies, the detractors, you name it, it will be the higher you go up, the bigger the devil. So there are lots of spotlights when you work for the President of the United States. I mean, it was the greatest privilege of my life to serve my country in that way, and also to work for the President of the United States on an important issue like healthcare reform. I'm actually like an Obamacare expert, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I will tell you about it is what made it really, really hard is that it was difficult for me to see people attack Barack Obama the way they did, knowing that we were only trying to do good and improve healthcare for those 50 million people who were like me screwed in 2004, right? And it was uneasy for me to see the anger and the hostility and me not take some ownership of that.
Episode number 2. We are almost at the top. Can you guess what the top 2 are? Can you take a guess? Not shockingly, this was an unbelievable special episode for me to record. This episode, I shared the very personal details of why we decided to adopt. This episode entailed a lot of frequently asked questions that I have gotten over the last couple years. For those of you not aware, the current update, we have been in the adoption process. It will be 4 years come January. We are adopting a little boy from the Pacific island of Samoa. And to be clear, we were told from the very beginning it was going to take 4 to 5 years. So we are on track. This is normal for a small island. We are not matched yet. We are still on the waiting list. As we understand it, we should anticipate being matched in 2023. It's incredibly surreal. So surreal. He will be between the ages of 2 and 5. And my mother's heart can hardly even fathom it. My heart and mind can hardly even wrap itself around the fact that our son is out there somewhere. So he's coming. But in this episode, I shared all of the details, how I got to the point that we wanted to adopt when we had 3 kids biologically, some of the challenges that we have faced, some of the bias that we have faced that we have had to work through and educate ourselves and those around us, how we chose the country that we did, fundraisers that we recommend, how our kids are handling and what we're currently doing to prepare. I chatted about all this and more. I warn you, there's 1 or 2 moments where you can get out your tears. You get out your tissues. Well, maybe your tears too. I certainly did. It's really a special episode. This is Why Did We Decide to Adopt? What spoke to my heart is that Caleb, in his little mind, he didn't look at these pictures and see the differences and the challenges that that could present. He didn't see skin color, that his brother would have a different skin color and instantly think of all of the potential challenges that could exist because of that. He didn't see the cultural differences and think, oh, I don't know how I'm going to relate to this brother of mine. He instantly found a way that he could relate by growing his hair long to look like his brother. And it was, again, one of these moments where I thought, man, I overcomplicate things sometimes. I overcomplicate things sometimes. At the end of the day, we just simply need to find ways that we can relate. And because we are all human, there is always a way that you can relate to somebody else, regardless of all of the differences, because we're human and we all experience fear, insecurity, joy, laughter, hurt, love, right? And that was just like, he saw a way he could relate to his baby brother by growing out his hair. So we did. We grew it out. It became quite a conversation statement. He actually had, to our surprise, beautiful, thick, blonde hair. Caleb actually has really beautiful hair when it's long. However, I got so sick of trying to take care of my six-year-old's hair. It just was, I was over it. So anyways, the bottom line, we did let it grow long. And then eventually we cut it because I was like, look, you can grow it out again if you want to when you're older, but this is a little much to take care of. And we ended up cutting it. I wrote a blog post. It is on the blog at hammersandhugs.com, kind of outlining his hair journey. And I remember thinking, this is so silly to write an entire blog post about his hair. And then I went through it and then I showed all the pictures after he got it cut. You guys, it was one of the top opened posts of the entire year. I had so many of you write to me and say how much it meant to you to read this story and to see, you know, how adoption is affecting our family, even something as simple as growing out hair and cutting it. So if you want to check out Caleb's hair saga, you can certainly visit it, hammersandhugs.com, and see all of the pictures. We did eventually end up cutting it. But the amazing thing is kids, they just own it. They own it. And Lily and Gracie instantly started drawing pictures of our family for school, and it had four kids. It was mommy, daddy, siblings, and then our baby brother. Like, we as the adults are the ones that make it so cerebral. We make it more challenging. I know there will be challenges when we bring him home. I embrace that. I recognize that. That's part of life. But to be completely honest, in my experience, children are quicker to embrace it because in their mind, here's a child that doesn't have a home. Why not bring him home to ours? So our children have done extremely well. We are very, very excited for them to actually meet him. We're excited to meet him. And it's been an amazing conversation as we have continued to talk about, you know, the racial piece and racial diversity and culture. And I mean, I could tell you so many stories of the way that we are seeing prayers answered in ways that we're trying to learn more about the Samoan culture, make connections. It's just been, it's been incredible. We are always looking for ways to learn more about the Samoan culture and how we can be incorporating it into our home for when we bring him home. Favorite episode number one. This is also one of the most frequently downloaded episodes. It is also probably one of the episodes that I have personally received the most positive feedback from, meaning so many people benefited from this particular show. It was incredibly meaningful to me, given our own unique story and history. This was the interview with one of my best friends who is still currently battling cancer. She has been battling it for 6 or 7 years now. She has been battling a very resistant form of lymphoma, despite the fact that it's one that, traditionally speaking, is very easily treatable. What made this episode that much more meaningful is that we, Ashley and I, have already lost one of our best friends to cancer. In fact, we just celebrated her third heavenly birthday the end of November. Our friend Heather died of breast cancer in 2019. And Ashley and I were both privileged to be able to help take care of her in her last weeks when she came home. And one of the most meaningful memories that I have of that time is watching Ashley, who also has cancer, serve Heather, who at that time was dying of cancer in her end days of breast cancer, watching Ashley blow dry Heather's hair because Heather was too weak to lift her arms up. It was just unbelievable. Ashley is a real life superhero and inspiration. She lives what she preaches, and I can say that as one of her best friends and the person who has heard her in the bad days and the good days. And she is the real deal. You do not want to miss this episode. I guarantee you will cry. I did multiple times. Not sorry about it. You cannot walk away from this episode without a tear and a smile, which is very appropriate considering that it is titled Finding Beauty and Hope in the Midst of Hardship with one of my best friends, Ashley Hoover.
To be honest, I don't feel like I ever had the moment of why me? And that's not something I can attribute to anything except Jesus. I don't know. In my mind, it's just been like, why not me? There's so much suffering that happens. There's so many people who go through so much hardship. So why do I feel like somehow I should be the exception to that?
Mm.
So it never was a why me. And it was very, you know, with each relapse, it was just kind of like a knock down to the ground. And then Joe and I would dust ourselves off and stand up and figure out how to move forward. So we allowed ourselves the space to mourn and to grieve the loss of, you know, what we thought was going to be more normal. And then we just kept going. So yeah, I just always have hope is kind of my word. And I've always just felt like as long as I have breath in my lungs, there is hope. And even when I don't have breath in my lungs, I have the hope of eternity with Jesus. So yeah, I've continued to cling, I think, to that through each time. And that's not to say that it's been rosy and easy, but yeah, we've made it through.
What are practical ways? So if for somebody who is listening to this, who has either recently received a diagnosis of cancer, maybe they have a loved one or a friend who has recently received a diagnosis, or maybe it's just an ongoing battle for them. What are practical tips that you could give to somebody to help them with the approach that I'm not just going to survive through cancer, I'm going to thrive through cancer, because you have done that better than really anybody that I know. And what practical advice would you have?
I think for me, like you said, I was 29 when I was diagnosed. So like I hadn't even hit 30 yet. Mm. And I did a lot of running. So you talk about like the thriving. I hate running so much. I hate it so much.
You were
much.
A softball player.
I was a
running
softball player.
Running means base to base.
Exactly. I could sprint short distances and I did that well, but I hated running. And I ran. Because there was something about when you see things being taken from you. So I hated running. My friends here would invite me to go running. I didn't want to go running with them. I thought, why would you spend your time doing that? And then I was in the hospital going through a stem cell transplant. Like I couldn't run if I wanted to. I could barely stand. And so there was something about that that was like, dang it, I want to run. Like, I want to be able to do those things. And so for me, thriving was almost out of stubbornness. Like, yeah. I'm not going to let this get the better of me. Like, I'm going to be who and what I thought I would be in my 30s.
Hope, hardship, joy, suffering. Oh, this Christmas season, if we could come to that place where we can allow these realities to coexist in our life and learn how to thrive by allowing them to both exist. Joy is not mutually exclusive of suffering. Hope is not mutually exclusive of hardship. Oh, I pray over all of you listening that episode would bless you if you've not listened to it, and that this holiday season you would just be encouraged. There is hope And just because it is hard right now, it's not the end of the story. And all of you guys, I'm so thankful for you. If you have not entered the giveaway, please, please do it. $100 Amazon gift card so that you can splurge this Christmas guilt-free. Don't share it with anyone. Just spend it on yourself. My Christmas treat to you, and a thank you for supporting me here on the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. The winner of the giveaway will be announced on the next show, the 100th episode. And that format is actually going to be an interview. My husband is going to interview me, and we're going to chat things that I have never talked about here on the podcast before, the journey, the ups, the downs, real talk, and celebrate episode 100 and give somebody $100. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters and you are loved.